Monster Man, episode 316, Fiersnaca and Herex. Hey everybody, it's James from the future here with a quick news update. First, don't forget that there are still episodes of Mega Monster Dumb Man going up on the Mega Dumbcast feed at megadumbcast.podbean.com. I'm going to drop a link in the show notes below. Second, copies of Lion Rampant the Crusader States are now available to buy from Northstar. And again, I'll put a link down in the show notes. Alright, I now return you to your regularly scheduled podcast. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the Lowlife section of Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. As we covered last time, Lowlife is kind of a catch-all category that includes sort of what you might call vermin or like environmental hazard monsters. So the naturally occurring wildlife that are not just animals that, you know, one might find in kind of a dungeon or other adventure-y type environment. And I mention this because this is a category that doesn't make an enormous amount of sense, and I think today's episode illustrates that really well. So in our last episode, we saw a couple of dangerous plants, and we saw a giant amoeba. Those all fit pretty comfortably within the sense of low life. They're sort of below the level of many adventurers' notice, but it's very hard to apply that kind of thinking to the first monster in today's episode, the Fiersnaca, which is just the fire snake. I know it sounds very cool, but it's just a fire snake. Well, I say just. It is huge, and I don't know that it's low. I don't know why it's not a monster or arguably an animal. I've got nothing. Oh, well, it's not an animal because it's intelligent, which again kind of excludes it from low life. Who knows? So these are some very large boys. They are relatives of the purple worm. They're not carnivorous, but you could have fooled me from the illustration, which shows the fire snake with a gaping maw full of dagger-like teeth. And they have a fiery breath, which launches in a sort of beam shape, rather than the more traditional cone shape. They're quite dragony, I guess, but a bit more snaky than flying. They're more snakes and less dinosaurs. They are not necessarily hostile. They're intelligent and they are willing to deal under certain circumstances, but there are certain times at which they are much easier to provoke. Now, they're not always aggressive, but they are kind of like cranky and bad-tempered, and there are times when they are particularly vulnerable where you might be more likely to get into a fight with them, and this is part of their reproductive cycle, which I quite like. So they normally just kind of burrow around, you know, digging tunnels through the earth, eating minerals, and so on. I mean, like I said, they're big. They're about 70 feet long. Sometimes they start to, like, heat up. Their internal fires get hotter and hotter, and this indicates that they're about to produce young, which are a separate monster in this book. Once they've done that, they need to go and immerse themselves in a sufficiently large body of water, or else they'll actually overheat. And once they are in that body of water, they can't leave it. It's too dangerous. They need to stay there long enough to cool down. So they'll be very upset if you try to disturb them. So I think this feels like the basis for an encounter that, you know, because the emerging from wherever they normally live underground to go soak in a body of water is something that they only do at certain points in their lives. It's something that could happen and be like perfectly natural, but the surrounding human communities would not be aware of what it was or what it meant. A bit like with the sharkkin, where we talked about how sharkkin have this cycle that they go through to choose their new leader, and how that, you know, might seem threatening to humans who didn't know what it was. So I think that's what they're envisioning with the Fiersnaca. I actually don't know. It comes from, I think, a solo module, XS2, Thunderdelve Mountain. So I don't know what the deal is there. But I do think that there's maybe the idea is that, you know, the fire snake is in the water. It's doing the cooling off post-reproduction process. And if you just, like, run in and try to fight it, thinking that it's just some evil monster, you'll have a tough fight on your hands, but arguably you can have a more productive discussion with it, you know, if you can sort of calm its bad temper, because it's not really intending to harm anyone, it's just doing something that is part of its natural cycle, although having an enormous, like, it's not even a predator, right? It's just the only danger, I guess, is that it's still giving off some heat, but so it's quite interesting. The only thing that I don't get about the Fiersnaca is what's it doing in this chapter? because it doesn't seem to match any of the criteria for being lowlife. And the only reason that I think that that's a problem is when I think about how Creature Catalog is organized, it seems to me that it's intended to be organized sort of by game role. Not 100%. Sometimes it's kind of in-world taxonomy, so like there's a separate section for undead. But humanoids and animals and lowlife all seem like they are intended to be used by a DM who's thinking, well, I want to have this area populated by some, you know, humanoid raiders. Let's go to the humanoid section and see what kind of things are available to me. And that only works if it makes sense for things to be in that humanoids section. And actually, you know, I complained about this with the Rockmen, but you can defend the inclusion of the Rockmen on that reading, because even though, like, taxonomically it doesn't make any sense for them to be humanoids, they do fulfill a very similar game role, i.e. they are muggers, to other types of humanoid creature. But the Fierce Naka does not fulfill the same kind of game role as any of these little harassment monsters, so I don't know what it's doing in this section, and not one of the other sections where it might fit a little more easily. So, like, the complaints about categorization are not me just, like, nitpicking every individual entry to see whether it fits some arbitrary definition, but they're me trying to think about how you are supposed to use this book when you are creating an adventure. Because it's not for you to look the stats up from a published adventure, because that's where a lot of these creatures come from. Their stats are in those places. Anyway, that's a side note about monster taxonomy. Speaking of monster life cycles, we get quite a detailed life cycle with our next creature, the Herax. The Herax is a giant insect that has a different appearance depending on where it is in its life cycle. It's actually quite clever. So the Herax egg, for instance, is a bit like the egg in Alien or another kind of landmine monster. So the Herax lays its egg, and the young are like fast-growing predators, so they need a food source. So the egg actually won't hatch until something disturbs it. Because, like, they want to know that there will be something in the area for the young to eat when they emerge from the egg. That's pretty clever. And it sort of turns the Herax egg into kind of a landmine. A clutch of Herax eggs lying around the battlefield, if someone bumps into it or disturbs it in some way, then the Herax could emerge and add some further complications. That's clever, and I like it. Next up, we have the larval form. And now the larval form are basically kind of beetle-like creatures. They have acidic saliva, and they're pretty much, they're nothing out of the mainstream of insect-y D&D monsters. They do have they do run the danger of permanently reducing your armor class by kind of etching into it with the acid. So they're a bit like rust monsters in that respect. Every time they hit you, the acid permanently reduces the effectiveness of your armor. But if you're not wearing armor, you take extra damage. So they are pretty tough. They then develop into the adult form. And they live underground in their larval form. And then they tunnel the way to the surface for their adult form, because the adult form can fly. And they are pretty, I mean, they're pretty beefy. They've got 13 hit dice. They're basically they're kind of dragonfly-y looking, but with a sting. And then they go around, you know, hunting for prey, looking for mates, and then burrowing down to lay their eggs. They have a paralyzing poison in their sting, and one thing that I like is that the adult Herax bite actually does less damage than the larval Herax. So there's a little kind of a trade-off there. They, you know, they gain in mobility, they gain in hit dice, although an almost mature Herax larva has 12 HD, so they're born with 6 hit dice, and then they grow up to have about 12 hit dice, and once they get to that level, they burrow up and turn into Herax adults. So actually, I think these guys are all right. They're very much the kind of thing that I would go and put into my post-apocalyptic game, and indeed I may, because they have that kind of alien wildlife quality, and they're in the lowlife section, and not the animal section, because dot, dot, dot. I guess there are not any insects or similar creatures like that in the animals section. So animals, for some reason, does not seem to include insects, even though these are giant insects, you know, much bigger than things like the raven and the crow, or even, you know, the porcupine, comma, giant, or the piranha, who knows? Again, taxonomy, who knows? But the Herax is not the kind of, like, nuisance, low-life monster that you would expect to see in the low-life section. And neither is the monster we're going to be talking about in our next episode. That's right, that is about all the monsters that we have time for today, but in our next episode, we're going to be continuing our journey through the lowlife section, and we're going to talk about the jellyfish, giant, which some have called the deadliest monster in basic D&D, and the killer tree, right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.